Ever notice how often we hear about a gene for this or that? Like genes are the explanation for everything. You know what I mean? From like how well you sleep to what food you like.
It's true, yeah. It's like genes get brought up all the time. And like you said, they get used to explain just about everything.
And it's almost always like this really direct link, right? Like one gene equals one specific trait.
Exactly. Like it's a one-to-one kind of deal. But I think you probably know where I'm going with this. Like most things in science, it's way more complicated than that.
Way more. That's what we're diving into today, this whole idea of genes and how this simplified story kind of took over and still impacts how people understand genetics, even now.
Yeah, it's a fascinating history, really. And a lot of it goes back to, well, Gregor Mendel.
Mendel, right, of course. Peas, genetics, high school biology. But don't worry, we're going way beyond the basic textbook stuff today. Promise.
Definitely. Because Mendel, brilliant as he was, the way his work is usually presented, it's like that's the be all and end all of genetics. But it's caused some misunderstandings about how genes really do their thing,
So, before we get to those misunderstandings, maybe let's start with a little refresher. What was Mendel even doing with all those keys anyway?
So basically, he was looking at inheritance, like how do traits get passed down from one generation to the next? And he used pea plants for this. But the really key thing is he focused on traits that were super clear-cut, either kind of traits.
Like what? Give me an example.
Okay, so like seed color. A pea was either yellow or it was green. No in between, And he did this with a bunch of different traits, but he always picked ones that were like this divided into these really distinct categories.
And that was important for his discoveries, right?
Yeah.
Being able to track those distinct traits across the different generations of peas.
Exactly. And that's where his like genius comes in, right? Mendel was seriously meticulous. He planned his experiments so carefully to kind of like simplify all the messiness of inheritance. And that let him see those clear patterns, how those traits were passed down.
So it was a choice to use those simple traits. He didn't necessarily think all traits work that way.
Yeah, exactly. He was trying to solve this specific puzzle about inheritance, not like create the ultimate model for how every single gene works in every single organism on Earth.
I like that. It's like
Yeah.
if you were trying to understand baking, but you only looked at recipes that only needed to adjust the flour, you'd miss out on a lot of complexity,
That's a
right?
perfect analogy, which actually brings us to Walter Frank Raphael Weldon. He was around at the same time as Mendel, and he really felt like Mendel's work, don't get him wrong, it was huge, but it was getting oversimplified and misused to explain like all of heredity.
So, just to be clear, Weldon, he wasn't anti-genes or anything, right?
Yeah, not at all. He totally believed genes existed. His issue was this idea that was gaining traction, this thought that genes dictated everything about an organism. Like they were the only factor that mattered. Today, we call it genetic determinism. He was pushing back against that, saying, hey, the environment, what's around you, what's inside you, it all interacts with genes. That's what really shapes an organism.
So instead of being like, oh, there's a gene for that, it's more like genes and D, the environment, work together.
You got it. Weldon was all about that interplay. Like, that's what creates all the incredible diversity we see in nature. It's not just genes in isolation. It really is amazing, though, when you think about it, like how we think about something so fundamental like genes, it's been totally shaped by how people interpreted it way back when.
Totally. And sometimes those simple stories, they stick around even when we know more, you
Yeah.
know? So, like, how did Mendel's work, which he was really using for a specific question about inheritance, become like the center of genetics? How did that happen?
Well, so get this. After being basically ignored for decades, Mendel's work, it got rediscovered. Like in the early 1900s, people were like, whoa, Mendel.
Rediscovering things in attics. It's a classic, I guess. So, what was it about that time that made his work suddenly click?
Timing, right. So in the early 1900s, scientists, they're really trying to figure out how evolution worked. Like at the gene level, all that stuff was new and exciting.
Ah, so that's where the Mendelians come in, right?
Yeah.
That group of scientists, all about Mendel, led by William Bateson.
Bingo. Bateson, he was like the ultimate Mendel fan. But he also had his own thing going on. He was really into this idea that evolution happened in these big, sudden jumps, like not Darwin's slow and gradual change over time, but like bam, something new.
Okay, I'm seeing where this is going. So, where do Mendel's peas fit into this whole evolution debate?
Well, because Mendel focused on those traits, the either ones, it kind of seemed like, hey, this lines up with those sudden jumps Bateson's talking about. Like
Right.
those traits appearing so suddenly, it fit the narrative.
It's like finding a puzzle piece that fits, but maybe it's from a totally different puzzle. And you're forcing it because it kind of sort of looks like it belongs.
Exactly. And that's the thing, right? By putting Mendel's work on this pedestal, Bateson and the Mendelians, they doubled down on this simplified view of genetics. It was all about that one gene, one trait idea. And without meaning to, they kind of pushed the environment to the side. Like all that intricate stuff about how genes actually work together, it got lost in the shuffle.
And this is what Weldon was worried about from the get-go, right? Like oversimplification, missing the bigger picture.
Yeah.
But did he have any like proof to back up his idea that the environment was important for how traits actually turned out?
Oh, we did. Remember we talked about water fleas earlier? Well, Weldon did a bunch of research with them, and he showed that how long their spines grew, it wasn't just their genes. It changed depending on what kind of water they were raised in.
Wow, seriously. The water they were swimming in actually changed how their bodies grew. That's wild.
Yeah.
Did that change anyone's mind back then? Like, was it enough to challenge the whole Mendelian thing that was taking off?
It's a good question, but unfortunately, no, not really. At the time, the Mendelians, their view, it was easier to grasp, you know, clear-cut inheritance, one gene, one trait. It was neat and tidy. Weldon, with his whole, hey, it's messy, genes and environment are all tangled up, it wasn't as catchy.
It's like that saying, right? If you have a hammer, everything looks like a nail. They had their Mendelian hammer, and they were going to see nails everywhere, even when it wasn't the whole story.
And you know, that's the thing about simple stories. They're easy to remember, easy to spread. But like we were saying before, those oversimplifications, they have consequences. They stick around.
So by focusing so much on those easy gene 4 explanations, mm-hmm. are we saying that's how we ended up with this whole genetic determinism thing?
Right.
Like we're just born with a set of traits and that's it, end of story.
That's a big part of it, yeah. And it's crept into how we approach so many things, education, healthcare, you name it. Like we're defining ourselves and others by this limited view of genes.
Right, like saying, oh, you've got the gene for being good at math, so you'll be fine. Or the flip side, nope, you don't have the gene, no point even trying. Like individual effort, the environment you're learning in, all that stuff, it gets ignored.
It's limiting, right. And that's why going back and looking at what Weldon was saying, it's not just about history. It's about understanding the potential we all have.
It really feels like things are changing now, though, right? Like we're starting to see the complexity that Weldon was talking about, what feels like forever ago.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, if you look at modern genetics, it's like that whole simplistic one gene equals one trait idea. Mm-hmm. It's basically out the window. We're finding all these crazy complex networks of genes interacting with each other, with the environment. It's amazing, really.
It's like we're finally starting to get a handle on just how intricate it all is.
Yeah.
So like, how do we square this, you know, more complex understanding with all the stuff we still hear?
Yeah.
Headlines about finding the gene for this or that, like it's a light switch or something.
It's about changing the whole story we tell about genes, right? Instead of looking for that one gene that's like the magic bullet, we need to be talking about predispositions, chances, possibilities, and always, always factoring in the environment, the random stuff that happens, all of it.
So less about absolutes, more about like acknowledging the gray areas.
Exactly, because genes, they aren't destiny. They're more like a blueprint. And how that blueprint gets turned into, you know, an actual living thing, it depends on so much. It's like a whole orchestra of factors throughout its whole life.
Okay, I like that. A blueprint, not a life sentence. So what does this actually look like? Like if we take a field like healthcare, where these gene trait connections are such a big deal.
Imagine healthcare, where instead of a doctor saying, you have this gene, so you're definitely going to get this disease, it's more like, okay, based on your genes, you've got a slightly higher chance of this, but here's what we can do to lower that risk. Lifestyle changes, early interventions, maybe even treatments that are tailored just for you.
So it's about empowering people, not just handing them a diagnosis and saying, well, that's that.
Exactly. Because genes, they're just one piece of the puzzle. There's so much more to understanding health and illness than just what's in your DNA.
And I'm guessing this goes beyond just healthcare, right? Like this shift in how we think about genes, it changes everything. Education, social policy, even just how we see ourselves in each other.
Oh, absolutely. Think about it if we stop thinking about talents, intelligence, even some behaviors. It's just like pre-programmed and unchangeable. Mm-hmm. It opens up so many possibilities.
It's like we're not just saying, what is this gene responsible for? We're asking, how does this gene work with everything else? And how can we use that knowledge to help people to create a fairer world?
Now you're getting it. It's about embracing all that complexity. Because when it comes to something as incredible and intricate as genetics, simple answers are almost never the whole story.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. It's been amazing, looking at these different perspectives, like historically, and seeing how much they still shape how we think about genes today. It's like this hidden history right there in our biology textbooks. And it reminds us that as we learn more and more about the human genome, genes are just one part of a much bigger, way more intricate story.
Well said. And the best part, we're still writing that story every single day.
Yeah.
And every new discovery, it's like, boom, another layer of complexity, another reason to be completely fascinated by this stuff.
And on that note, we'll leave you with this. What are the environments that shape you, and how can you actively influence them, to be the best version of yourself? It's something to think about as we all keep exploring this incredible world of genes and what it means to be human. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive. We'll catch you next time for another exploration into the world of fascinating facts and thought-provoking ideas.